motherfucker's gonna have the news. Today is Monday, November 4th, 2019. The Los Angeles podcast. Hayes Davenport, Scott Frazier, and Alyssa Walker. We have so much stuff to get through today.
It's the longest weekend of the year because of daylight savings time.
This will be our longest episode. We're going to do an extra hour. This is what we're spending our extra hour on. Here I was so excited to come in and tell another LA story about how I fell off my scooter.
What?
And
Hayes, you're done with these.
I know. I think I might be. It sucks. Mitch O'Farrell has almost succeeded in killing me on a scooter. This was a pothole spanning the entire bike lane at Sunset and Alvarado.
Oh, my God.
Skidded like 5 feet.
You didn't even talk about the other day where you hit the geofence when you were on the Hyperion bridge, the Riverside bridge?
Oh, yeah. I hit the geofence.
Like the worst place that you could.
With cars tailgating me under a bridge.
It's like the
going
least.
Going on like blind curves. And my scooter decelerates itself from 15 miles an hour to 3.
Yeah.
And so I have to drag it
probably
to the side of the road.
The least safe place that you could hit a geofence.
Yeah, why put the geofence on that side
on that
of the
bridge, right?
Yeah.
So stupid. Anyway, surely that's the worst thing that happened to any of us this week. Scott, do you have an LA story?
I have an LA story. I was very prepped to have my LA story be about walking to go see the movie Jojo Rabbit while the, what were they calling it? The outdoor fire?
Outside fire.
Outside fire.
That's what it was called.
It should all be called that.
The fire at the recycling plant in Atwater Village, which made the air taste a lot like burning metal and was very painful to breathe. That was going to be my LA story.
I could see the mushroom cloud
right
through that window right there.
It was bad.
Yeah.
That got superseded because I was on the way home from the Vista Theater yesterday, broad daylight, like 3:30 p.m., and I got mugged on my street. And it was like, okay, so I was walking home from this movie, which definitely made me cry a lot at the end. Very good movie. I recommend people go see it. So I'm like walking, I'm thinking about this movie, right? And I turn onto my street and there are a couple of guys like sitting by this, some kind of SUV. I wish I were a car guy because then I would know.
Then you could identify.
I could not possibly. I think it was like an Escalade or something. It was one of those ones that looks like a giant death machine. So they're just like sitting there and this guy is like, hey man, can I talk to you for a second? I hate talking to strangers, but I normally do it.
Even people you know sometimes.
I know. Hayes has. That's for a different time. So I go over and they're like, oh yeah, I just got in from Chicago. Can I use your phone to call my sister? And this is actually something that happens to me all the time. People ask me if they can use my phone and I'm generally like,
with five teenagers.
Three. It was three teenagers. Okay. And
car. No one has a...
See, this is a major red flag. Well, they were sitting on this little low-hanging wall right there. Not until I started walking towards them did I notice that they were with this vehicle and that there were two other people in the car. Somebody definitely has a phone, right? So I'm walking towards them. I'm like, yeah, I can call somebody for you. And this is generally what I do. I'll call and put my phone on speaker. There are so many people in LA who are just getting out of prison and actually do not have a way to contact their people. I'm like, okay, if you're with five people, obviously that's a little bit less likely, but it didn't put it together. I'm slow. And so I pull my phone. I start typing in this number. Guy's like, the thing is she doesn't speak English. I'm like, just give me the number, you know? So he starts giving me a number that is obviously fake.
What was obviously fake about it?
There is a let's break it down. Phone number, 10 numbers, right?
1, 2, 3.
It's 3 and 3 and 4. So he gives me 3 numbers and then 5 numbers and then is thinking, and I'm like, this is not a real phone number.
Oh, God.
And it was too late. I was at the point that I was like, okay, this is not real. I'm about to turn around and leave. Yeah. The other guy who's to my left does the most comically long wind-up punch.
Oh my God.
Sucker punched me in the side of my face. Like it was like if you were an Olympic shot putter trying to he put that much into it. And, you know, shame on me because I still got hit by it at the end of this like 30 second windup. So hit me. And then I start kind of like stalking away. Like, maybe I'm not going to let you use my phone after all. and then I noticed that, and then I noticed they're following me. And the guy who hit me is like, cough up the phone, cough it up. And so then I'm like, no, I start running. And so these kids start running after me. I throw a punch at somebody, does not land. I then try and kick somebody else. I'm pretty positive that doesn't land either. This is maybe the worst part about this entire experience for me is that it forced me to really contemplate what a lanky moron I look like trying to like fight back and defend myself.
You have reach.
Yes. So they weren't getting close to me. Yeah. This is like the masculinity of fighting. A lot of people just like throwing punches at the air and then me like running away. So I do run again. And then all of the guys who are chasing me then are suddenly like, oh shit. And then they take off in the other direction and then they get back in the car and they leave. And so then I have like all my adrenaline going. I was very concerned that I was going to lead them directly to my house.
Sure. So you had to run away from.
So I ran past my house and then they started taking off the other direction. So then like totally wisely, I start looking for like a rock that I can then run back after them with and throw at their car and didn't find one.
Wow.
Anyway, it was a whole mess. So having had some time to replay it, you know, a couple thousand times in my mind, this whole sequence of events. So yeah, there were two other people in the car. One guy in the back who didn't get out and whoever was driving the car. And I, first of all, this was totally an amateur, like this was a total botch job,
yeah.
Right? Like three on one and they like wanted my phone off me and they couldn't manage to get it.
And your phone isn't even that nice.
No, it's not. But you take it to a pawn shop, it's $100 bill or whatever. I mean, it's more than nothing, I guess. But this was a total like.
But they didn't obviously want your phone.
They fucked this up real bad. Is yeah. all I'm saying. Like this should have been. They were looking for somebody who was like a stupid easy target, and they found me. And yet, nonetheless, they walked away empty-handed.
I'm still surprised. I mean, if it were me and someone asked for my phone, I would say, "Can I first use it to buy you?
Oh, can more I go phones? Get it? Yeah, can I get you some like?"
I'm so slow. Like I'm very, very slow.
I saw Scott shortly after and his response to why didn't you just give him your phone was then how could I post about it? And he did get up a few good posts last night, which you might not have been able to otherwise.
It takes me a while to process things, right? So like you hit me in the side of the face. I need to think about that. I start walking away.
You're still worried about the number of the digits of the phone.
Yeah, just like I'm starting to think that number was even real.
I'm like, at this point, 100% sure that this was like, you know, some kind of like gang initiation or something.
It
where
seems
it's like
a dare. It symbolic. Doesn't seem, yeah.
They were definitely like maybe like 20 tops, but I would say more likely that they were high school students.
Yeah.
Scrawny little kids.
Do you feel bad that you maybe prevented some children from getting into the gang of their choice?
No.
Now they have to settle for a lesser gang.
You kind of like wonder, right? Like it's so. It was some kind of test. It's like, I don't know. Honestly, I feel really embarrassed because when they took off running and then like before I actually saw you and I was like up in my house, I was like, is this like a Gone in 60 Seconds situation where they like had a stopwatch going and then time's up, have to get back in the car and go somewhere else.
Gotta get
like,
the SUV getting, back home to mom.
I don't know. Right. It's like they're getting tested. Either they failed the test because they did not successfully get anything or they passed the test because they just like
they punched
a random stranger. I don't know. The worst thing is like maybe I just made them better at mugging next time. I don't know. As far as being a mark goes. Yeah, that's true. I probably actually handicapped them because now they're going to assume that everybody is as slow as me.
Wow.
I don't know.
That sucks.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
He has a cut on his face.
Yeah, it's not that bad though.
I feel fine.
I mean, your pain must be
other than
emotional.
I have something to heal your emotional pain. John Gordon of Metro, friend of the show.
Yes.
A while ago, I was complaining that the old Metro cards suck. He reached out to me via DM and says, I have a little surprise for you. Sent me three brand new MetroCard designs. Each of us get one. Of each of them.
Of each?
Oh my gosh, these are beautiful.
They are
This is the new art that's along the on the screens, right?
Yes, it's on the screens and they put them on the cards as well. They are sick.
These are incredible. We have to get these up on the Twitter account.
Yes, we do. I think we are maybe supposed to. I think they'd probably like to announce them first.
Okay. I think people had them. I think they gave these away at the event, right?
Oh, okay. Possible.
I'm pretty sure
we
they
do
did.
Have to put them up. It is art by Jasmine Atienza, Eric Almanza, and Angela Wilcox. I love them all.
They're so good. Beautiful.
What's
so next
favorite?
Time you get mugged, you can just give them one of these because they'll be worth a lot of money.
One of them has the
this
Metro.
Definitely is my favorite.
I
love
really
the
like this, the really Jasmine good. Atienza one where they're looking out the window.
This is not useful for any of our listeners. I guess we'll have to tag ourselves in our favorite ones tomorrow. Will.
That's so cool. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
That was really nice.
John also said on Twitter this week that Metro is putting out an RFP for a new app. I don't know if you saw that.
This is a big week for Metro.
So they are going there. He acknowledged on Twitter that the current custom app sucks. I think he actually did use those words.
I used to use it and then I stopped because it sucks.
So this could be a really big moment, I think, for creating something from scratch and that actually works.
Alyssa. Did you get punched in the face this week?
Well, unless you count my children repeatedly bruising and battering me.
Yeah,
that's worse than I got it.
It was Halloween. I'm always just bringing it back to the milestones for my children. Uh-huh. But I wrote a story last week about how dangerous Halloween night is for kids. And actually, a child was hit by a drunk driver with his family in Long Beach. And the child died, and then now the father has died as well. Just total bummers. Got to keep bringing it up. But
there was a hit and run death in Van Nuys as well.
Yes.
This week.
Yes. Was it on Halloween? No, a different day. Yeah. But anyway, just thinking a lot about going around our neighborhood with a bunch of little kids and cars coming so fast down the streets, even on Halloween night, even when you know at 6 o'clock at night when you can see children walking around. And then like the ongoing pedestrian shaming campaigns that even like LADOT did one that was like, wear bright colored costumes and carry a flashlight. And I mean, so I had to go as something that would be representative of my values. So I dressed as a crosswalk and I had like a flashing walk sign that I wore, and like I got to pose at the Scramble crosswalk in Hollywood, and I got to pose with our crossing guard when I took the kids to school in the morning.
Really cool.
But I think I'm just gonna wear it all the time now because I felt much safer
as a crosswalk.
I'm just gonna wear that big giant flashing walk sign at all times when I'm going around, especially on Halloween.
But where does everyone go from all over the city in this area? They go to Armstrong near the Silver Lake Reservoir,
where they
which
close
is
the
fully
streets.
Closed off.
And that's the most ridiculous thing, because they close a few streets and then people drive their kids there, and then they contribute to the dangerous traffic. It's such a mess. Like it should be like a night where we're banning cars at least, or just creating some kind of, you know, code of like making sure people aren't driving around. But then it really does show that you can control speeds in neighborhood streets, at least like cut through streets. You know, we could really fix these problems and we can make sure that people aren't driving quickly at least through the neighborhoods. I mean, but we'll have this all fixed by next year, I'm sure. So I won't have to complain about it again. But
I always wonder if you buy a house like on that street, if the realtor mentions like, oh, by the way, on Halloween, you have to spend $10,000.
Well, there's that one. Then there's also the one in Carroll Street in Angelino Heights, all the Victorians. Mm-hmm. And those people, I think, get like hounded all year round.
Where do you guys find out about these things?
I don't know how other people found it. We just
like
stumbled upon it.
Yeah. But like those are two hot streets for sure. And you have to buy so much candy.
I always wonder where the trick-or-treaters are going because I don't get any.
They come on my street. Well, obviously your street's very dangerous, Scott. No one's going to come there again. Not after listening to this. But my street for some reason gets tons of trick-or-treaters. And I think it's because we're a flat neighborhood and that the houses have a good mix of density. So we have like some single family homes and we have a lot of porches and we have a lot of like approachable walkability maybe on our block. But we also have tons of apartment buildings. I don't know. It's like it's a very Halloween friendly street. But
I have a short LA story, which is I saw, just happened to be passing by while one of the new care team cleanups was going on.
Ooh.
This is something that Mayor Garcetti's office has rolled out with the Bureau of Sanitation Services, where they're changing the way they do what were formerly called encampment sweeps. They are really trying to get away from that terminology.
Yep.
But they're posting these cleanups more in advance, and it's not about, they're saying that they're not throwing away tents or people's possessions. It really is about cleaning up trash and helping create space so that people in wheelchairs, for example, can get by, and so they can be ADA compliant. A lot of them do not have police involvement. The Care Plus cleanups do.
Oof.
That means that LAPD.
How do you get that level of service? How do you?
It's like Hulu Plus, Apple TV Plus. Just pay $6 a month, and the police will.
That's a very interesting branding choice.
They're supposed to observe from a distance or something like that, and be called in when Bureau of Sanitation wants them. In this case, I saw they were talking to somebody. Uh-huh. They were actually up there in the sweep. It was a guy that had a really big spread and wasn't moving his stuff. This was the Hoover encampment, sort of on the edge of Silver Lake and historic Filipino town.
You were talking about it before, yeah.
Yes.
Where there was a big fire last week.
Yes, there was.
Up the block.
Yes, but that area, it's a weird encampment because on the other side of the fence is Caltrans territory.
Right.
So the city is only allowed to do the streets.
Well, Caltrans came through and fenced that off for that reason.
Yeah.
But without fixing any of the problem and now limiting the sidewalk space for everyone.
Correct.
So they actually made it worse.
I will say...
Care minus.
They got care minus plus Caltrans.
In general, it was better than other...
Were they wearing different clothing to identify? Okay.
They were wearing the vests that everyone should wear on Halloween.
what was the difference as far as like being an observer? What did you feel like?
Lhasa was there. They were very active and in a way that they are not always. Like sometimes they would be there on like earlier sweeps, but not always. People were getting to keep their stuff and like come back. Like were given a chance to sort of pack up. In some cases, like if they had sort of an improvised tent that wasn't like a tent that you could fold up and pack away, but like a tarp and some boxes and things like that, those got taken down and thrown out. There was someone there also from Streetwatch LA that goes to all the encampments, cleanups when they're posted, and they had extra tents that they, and so they replaced this guy's. But I was, of the people I talked to who were out there, there was a more, it was like begrudging, but a sense of like not like
up in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. And the people doing the cleanups seem to be much happier with the situation. And I've had people in that encampment specifically wanting it to be cleaned up, like wanting trash to be
thrown
out.
They put some new trash cans up there too. Yeah.
Yeah. They want Sharps containers too.
Having the police back like further from the interaction is a good, like whatever you can do to make it a less adversarial interaction between the city. And I think that's what we've talked about in the past is it's just how do you make that into a trusting relationship. And of course, it's going to be over a period of time proving that they can do that non-adversarially.
Because of the damage that has been wrought for many years.
I mean, and this was brought up too in the council meeting when they were having these discussions about what they could criminalize or whatever in the street. The sidewalk blocking is a big challenge, especially where we were just talking about, because it's a horrible underpass anyway.
Yes.
It's very narrow. Mm-hmm. Caltrans came through and fenced it off and made it even narrower and worse. And you can't even walk around it without going in a very busy, very scary street. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be something where we're either like creating, and this is where kids walk to school. Mm-hmm. There's a soccer field right there. Are we going to like start creating like maybe road diets through these underpasses where people could walk in the street? Cause like I go on a stroller with my stroller there and I can't walk under there. That's a place I can no longer walk because
the sidewalk
people are living there.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not scared to walk by people who are in tents.
No, you're scared to walk in the street.
I don't want to walk in the street. Exactly. So how do we start to fix this? Caltrans really does need to step up because this is their problem. I mean, it's because they built the freeway.
First you want to defund them and now you want us to...
I would settle for defunding them. We can't even get them to take care of the literal street.
Right. Yeah, no.
I don't know what chance there is.
It's not even just this particular thing. It's just like complete abandonment of this infrastructure that they have put through the middle of our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And now people can live there because it's the only place that they can go because there's a freeway there. I mean, it's just a mess.
The issue is that the homeless move like 4 miles an hour. And in order to get the attention of Caltrans, they have to move at least 45 miles an hour. If we could just zoom them around the neighborhood.
If they had more cars, then it would be...
could zoom them around the neighborhood, then Caltrans would pay attention.
That's what really makes me the most mad, I think, when I see this policy anyway.
We have some housekeeping of our own to do from last week. Basically, everything we talked about was immediately out of date by the time we actually posted the episode. Yeah. Most notably, as I mentioned in a hastily recorded disclaimer, Katie Hill, Congresswoman Katie Hill, resigned her position on Sunday after the release of revenge porn photos from her husband, who she's currently in the process of divorcing, and the threat, the suggested threat of hundreds more,
right,
were she to stay in office. I think everything that we talked about last week still applies to this story. The news is that a bunch of people are lining up to run. Steve Knight has basically announced that he is going to run again. George Papadopoulos, the famous coffee boy, who does not, I don't think, live in the district.
Not to my knowledge.
But he's been to jail, so he qualifies. He definitely.
I saw something on Twitter, and I don't remember where I saw it, but I saw somebody saying that the person who actually posted the Katie Hill story for Red State was a former Steve Knight staffer.
Yes, that's right. And not just for Red State, wrote the Guardian story as well.
Daily Mail.
Sorry, Daily Mail.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, so that, I mean, the entire thing is extremely shady. We have, there is a Democratic assemblywoman who is also at least
considering. Yes, Christy Smith has announced.
Okay,
announced. She's fully in there. Someone, I forget who, pointed out that she really worked the phones that weekend because she showed up with everybody's endorsement on like Monday morning.
Yeah.
So I guess it was sort of in the air, but I mean, it's an open field now.
The Papadopoulos thing was that he actually said, it looks like District 25 is going to be up for grabs the day before the Red State story broke. So
yeah,
in case there was any question about whether or not this was a concerted Trumpist Republican attack against just like a woman being in a seat of power, there you have it. Like, that's really clear at this point.
Christy Smith is great. I think she has a great shot in this race. And I mean, who knows like what the backlash this whole proceeding has like up in that area. But the whole thing is very gross.
Has Katie Hill announced what she's doing from here at this point?
I don't believe so. She gave a farewell speech on the floor of the House, but did not announce any specific plans going forward. We also have to make a correction. I was informed or reminded that John Noguez, the former county assessor, did not go to prison. He went to jail for 3 months after being accused of taking bribes to give more favorable assessments to properties of connected and wealthy people. He actually has not gone to trial yet.
Wow. So that was 5 or 6 years ago?
It was
ago?
A really long time ago. And they're still, the wheels of justice are turning very slowly.
Maybe we get 2-for-1 on assessors by the time that actually goes to trial.
That was, it's Jackie Lacey's office that would be putting together that case. We mentioned that George Gascon, the San Francisco district attorney who just resigned, might be coming down to L.A. to run in the race against Jackie Lacey. This was heavily rumored. Then on Monday morning, he did announce that he was going to do that. Jackie Lacey was in the news a lot this week. She went to a meeting at the...
not her best week,
No. Did you see the Stonewall Dems meeting that she went to where she basically apologized for the way that various law enforcement entities handled the Ed Buck case, why they didn't press charges earlier, and basically revealed something that has never come out before, which is at the crime scene, a sheriff opened a box of drugs that she said made the evidence inadmissible.
Wow. Yeah, nope. So this was a key revelation that she was introducing in a format that is interesting. If this is actually true, it's interesting that this would be the place that she would choose to bring that up for the first time.
On the verge of getting censured by this
yeah,
powerful political organization.
Almost literally excoriated in the original definition of the word. She was told by the Stonewall Dems that basically they can't wait to endorse somebody who's not her, which is a sentiment that Jackie Lacey is hearing a lot lately.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell if this is like, if that's true, it's incredibly damning of the sheriff's department. Hard to tell if it's not just like a cover your ass sort of situation.
The
like,
circumstances would definitely suggest that.
That, right?
But I mean, it's very weird that only now are we hearing about this at the moment of the most political expedience.
Also this week, Jackie Lacey was in the news because she is going to be investigating the LA Times' claims that Herb Wesson's son, Herb Wesson III, was the recipient of rent benefits, discounted rent at his apartment where he lived for many years because his father was city council president and was helping the developer who owned his building get approvals from city council. Mm-hmm. So Jackie Lacey is going to be investigating this claim. Interesting because they are kind of friends. Like they have worked collaboratively for each other's political campaigns and endorsed one another for a long time. Jackie Lacey, for her part, said that her office doesn't take those kind of things into account and they go where the evidence leads, which is a really interesting juxtaposition for the Ed Buck case that she was also defending, maybe not doing that exact thing in this same week. So how much faith do we actually have that Jackie Lacey's DA office is actually capable of investigating Herb Wesson's son in a in an unbiased way?
They're really trotting out his endorsement. Jackie Lacey's campaign is really celebrating that Herb Wesson supports her.
Which, I mean, it just kind of goes to logical reasoning that you would then not want that if he was guilty of corruption. I mean, Herb Wesson, for his part, his office is saying what I think is really funny, which is that this is a political attack against him and it's like a conspiracy. He's kind of
political opponents.
His political opponents. Where I'm like, you
teased it out of his son that his rent had been increased for many years.
Maybe they were just testing the new rent hike rules.
Maybe.
Just like on one person.
We're going to talk about that. A lot of articles this week in all manner of mostly national prestige media saying that California is doomed.
Right.
Written by a lot of people who, as of this recording, still or continue to live in California. And Alyssa, you got in on it and responded.
I got in so early. I feel like I was too early because a lot of more stories got published after my story went up, so I couldn't make any direct attacks.
But it must give you some satisfaction that some people were filing knowing that you'd already written this thing, but didn't want to rewrite their whole
thing. I could do some good stuff.
You live in the fray on this particular issue.
Yeah, this one was a tough one, but it's all the same stories, right? It's like, there are so many good points made by the true locals, not people who just moved here a few months ago and then wrote a story saying how California is unlivable. My favorite fire follow is Susie Cagle, who is in San Francisco and writes a lot for The Guardian and other places about kind of just fact checking, I think, people's perceptions about fire. And she's been on fire this week. And it was good to kind of go back and forth between every East Coast or the call is coming from inside the state post about how everything is over. And then kind of looking at it was so weird that we're getting all this grief right now because the worst fire season was actually like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And like last year was the most destructive from like human lives lost and property loss. But it's actually been much worse. And this is actually a very mellow year when it comes to fires. And we've actually learned so much from the last few years fighting them that we're doing a much better job than we were before.
It was interesting. I saw it's the similar number of fires to the last couple of years at this time, but much smaller.
Yeah. No, acres burn, everything. I mean, we've just, you know, we've been raking our forests so well. Mm-hmm. And I'm just gonna, not really.
But pour one out for Gavin Newsom, who went way out of his way to say, my hat off to Donald Trump. Yeah. And then Donald Trump called him like a fucking clown or whatever on Twitter.
That's gotta hurt. Never compliment.
Oh, one of these days. He'll win him over.
Never say. But what I wanted to keep pointing out is it's so hilarious that we just keep getting our fingers, the fingers wagged in our faces and everybody telling us about how horrible it is that we live here in this desert, not true, and that we've brought this on ourselves, whatever. And then you look at the numbers, and I pulled this study, this NRDC study from a year or two ago. If the rest of the country reduced its emissions, like we've reduced our emissions, and not giving any awards to anybody who's in charge of taking cars off streets or anything, like, of course, you know, I'm the biggest critic of the state. But if everyone else had done just what we've been doing normally, our overall emissions would be 25% lower. And that would have probably made a big difference in everything, you know, right? In policy and, you know, and you can't really draw the directest line to extreme weather, like with the fires have not been that bad, but it would have gotten the country on the right track. So, and meanwhile, this whole thing playing out this week about a handful of automakers deciding to side with Trump.
GM
with
the, in particular.
Yeah, GM, Toyota, like all these very surprising people that have roots in this state and that are making cars and designing their cars here, not siding with us, right? Not
siding with Trump in his fight to make it so that California could not set stricter gas mileage standards.
Which if
and then
everybody
immediately getting bailed on, which happens every time you align with the administration, like two
every
days
time.
Later, you find yourself completely alone.
It's just, it was just this thing that was just getting so annoying this whole, the last 2 weeks is, oh, we keep blaming us or we're this apocalyptic, you know, unlivable state. But if really, if everyone else had fallen in line with us a couple decades ago when we started making these changes, something could have changed. Something could have been different. So I don't feel bad for any of these people whining about how horrible California is, because check your own emissions.
Check your emissions. I like that.
I noticed you didn't even mention that the mayor of Los Angeles is the head of the climate mayors for the entire world.
For the whole world.
You forgot. That
I'll never forget that.
Did he even come back from Copenhagen? I'm not entirely sure.
I think he was at the climate strike. Greta Thunberg was here on Friday.
Was he at the metro thing?
I think he was at the metro thing, right? He must have been.
I don't know. I'm assuming that he wasn't
Snoop was
actually
at the, we're talking about the opening of the A-Line/Blue Line. I'm sure he was there if Snoop was there, right?
Let's talk about that now. You could call it a reopening, but they much preferred, as you pointed out, Scott, to focus on that this is like coordinating the new A-Line.
Right.
The Blue Line has been closed for a while. Mm-hmm. It opened up. It was a disaster today. The first couple days. First couple days of it being open again. But let's talk about the proceedings first. Snoop was there.
Snoop was there. He's wearing this cute blue suit. He's very charming. Talked about how he used to ride it to get around. Mm-hmm. And then I guess they like simulcast it. He was at the downtown LA one. And then there was like
a Long
Willowbrook and Long Beach one or something. And then they didn't get Snoop. They just got like a screen of Snoop or something.
Tale of Two Cities.
Cold.
this project, obviously the Blue Line, the A Line has been closed for 8-10 months at this point. So that's basically all of the year 2019. And this work that they were doing, they were saying was going to involve putting in more turnback tracks. These are the places where a train can switch from the east side track to the west side track or vice versa. That was a major problem with the Blue Line throughout its history, as the Blue Line was the first light rail line that we ever built up here. They didn't really know what they were doing. I would argue they still don't necessarily, but definitely they didn't in the late 1980s. So when there was an accident or a car ran into a train or a train ran into another train or a person got hit by a train, then it would be very hard for service to resume in any kind of reasonable amount of time. So they put in additional turnbacks so that trains could move around and reduce the amount of delay that we were seeing. They also did some electrical work on the overhead catenary system and the substations. These are all like real basic maintenance components that were reaching their end of life on the Blue Line and had to be redone. So they did this whole new blue thing. It was like a $1 billion project. And they were saying, it's in the name, it's going to be a new Blue Line. Mm-hmm. Then a couple months ago, I guess, or probably around the time that they realized they weren't going to be able to reopen on schedule, they were like, what if we just do this A-Line renaming and change out everything? And then when it reopens, people will have this sense that it's totally different. Honestly, I didn't even really think about it until this weekend, but I was like, well, every article that you read now is all about, think you're going to ride the Blue Line? No, it's actually the A Line, which is, you know, like what's in a name? Sort of, it's like, what difference does it actually make to a writer? None whatsoever. But I think that that was a really savvy way to avoid having the entire Metro writing public focus instead on what is actually functionally going to be different about the writing experience. Now that this train has been closed for 10 months, I don't
digital
actually...
Digital screens. They have digital screens.
They have digital touch screens, which you'll have a lot of time to play with because the train still is not going to come very frequently.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was also just going to say within a few hours. So they were saying, people were saying yesterday riding it, it was still taking a long time, longer than it was supposed to, over an hour. But okay, maybe there were some hiccups on your first day of service or whatever. Yeah. Too much like Snoop fans trying to crowd on or something. But then somebody was hit and killed at like 10 o'clock at night. Somebody was on the tracks and one person survived. There were two people on the tracks and one person survived, one person was killed. I don't know if that's like related to the changes or whatever, but like that's the worst first day thing. I mean, you can see.
What's really different here? Like the Metro Blue Line has been one of, if not the single deadliest light rail lines in the entire country since it first opened. This was a frequent source of journalistic criticism of the Blue Line during the 90s. So many people were hit and killed by the Blue Line because there are so many crossings that it has that are at grade. You really have to put this squarely on Metro because the train has been out of service for so long now. And there are so many of these crossings where if in a lot of cases that have been reported on specifically by Streets Blog and Sar Suleiman, that there are frequently Union Pacific trucks that are stopped on two of the tracks of the four tracks that are like motionless for a long time. And kids will get the idea that they're going to go over them or under them and not know that there is also a train that could be coming on the other side. Now, compound that with the fact that the train hasn't been in service for 10 months. People's habits have, in terms of how they're getting across this right of way, have changed significantly. And it's a dangerous situation. So if there are people in South LA, if there are people in North Long Beach and these communities that are not aware of fact that the Blue Line is coming back, you really have to put that on Metro. And the fact that we saw this on day one, we obviously didn't get the kind of safety improvements that we needed here.
They advertised that after the improvements, the trip would also be faster. It was slower for the first couple of days. Is there any chance that whatever like will be fixed to make that true?
So this was interesting because we were seeing that the timetable, somebody, Carter Rubin, a friend of the show, former guest, posted that new timetable says that the trip will be 53 minutes, which I think it was 55 before. But Phil Washington had said...
No, it was 58 and was 53, 58. So it's 5 minutes faster.
So that was what Metro had been saying, that the trip would be 5 minutes faster. I've got to say, like, that 58 minutes was optimistic before. And I don't see that anything that they did would make it 5 minutes faster. I really don't. I mean, the kind of work that they did, one of the big things that they were talking about doing was transit signal prioritization, which is what we have in downtown LA currently, which is not great, but doesn't exist at all in downtown Long Beach. That was one of the things that they were doing down there. So that's really the only time-saving measure that there could possibly be.
That's a City of Long Beach thing, not even a City of LA thing. That's something that they only did there. So why we're asking for signal prioritization for the Expo line, it's a lot of these same intersections, all these places that you're still getting backed up. That PICO beyond, you know, backup is going to still happen.
This is the thing where when Expo first opened and everyone was like, why do we have to wait at these lights? We need signal prioritization. And then the city said, well, you already do have signal prioritization. What you want is signal preemption, which means that you'll never have to wait regardless. Prioritization just means that you have a window during which, if you time it correctly, then you get the green light. And then that now is what is in place in downtown Long Beach. But we've seen how that works out in downtown LA. The trains have a really hard time staying within that window that allows them to hit those green lights. I don't see that this would make things significantly faster on a regular basis. I think the best thing that could possibly happen for riders is kind of what I said at the top, which is when we have delays to Blue Line service, the train can resume somewhat regular service quicker than before. You would hope also that it would stop killing people, right? Like that, it was closed for a year and we put over $1 billion of work into it. That would also be good.
Mm-hmm. Can we celebrate the LA Times Guild ratifying their deal on Halloween Day? I saw my feed was full of people in banana suits, like celebrating this deal. To his credit, Patrick Soon-Shiong came to the floor of the newsroom, shaking hands with the co-chairs of the negotiating committee, who include friend of the show, Carolina Miranda. This is, it's so exciting, and it's mostly, I think, an occasion to really celebrate this, what an achievement just this is for labor, basically. I mean, how often do you hear about like workers saving their organization to the degree that this group of reporters did?
It's incredible. And not only that, like the impacts of this beyond the LA Times newsroom have been profound. Mm-hmm. We've seen a wave of media unionization that I think is in a lot of ways directly attributable to the LA Times union drive, which really kicked things off whenever that happened 3 years ago at this point. Yep.
So many other organizations have followed.
Really, like, just all the credit in the world to them. Carolina Miranda was just posting on Twitter this past week that the Marciano Art Foundation, that their museum is actually undergoing unionization, which she had previously said is an area that has lagged in LA. We don't have any unionized museums here. So I think that we are seeing that those kind of labor victories are contagious. That spirit is contagious.
Yeah. Was a lot of work. All the photos that they posted of that, just like sitting in that conference room.
Drinking bourbon.
Yes, the effect it must have had on their nutritional health, their posture, all of it.
And kind of this week, we also had this, I don't know, the alternate timeline of what happened at Deadspin this week. A unionized, you know, I was part of the union there at Gizmodo slash Gawker before I left. And sometimes the union is not stronger sometimes than these corporate interests that are taking over media. I mean, the union is still very strong, and it's what they did was very admirable. Like, basically every writer at Deadspin quit after they were told to do something different than what they have been doing successfully for years. But just a lesson, and I guess what we have avoided maybe at the LA Times, which thank God, I mean, that could have happened. That could have been Trunk. That could have been all these writers. This all was avoided. Thank God.
I think a big factor between what happened with the LA Times after the new ownership and what happened with Deadspin is, like, a lot depends on whether or not your management is stupid. Just like if they are acting really against their own interests. Yeah. I mean, they took the value of this commodity to zero because of totally unforced errors.
Yeah.
They took the precious, some of the best writers alive.
Yeah.
They had.
They actively shooed them out the door.
Yes. Fired some, and then the rest left. I mean, they are idiots, the people running this operation, in a way that Patrick Soon-Shiong obviously saw the value in keeping his supporters happy.
I feel like there is an ongoing, and I think this is what makes me really happy to see the unionization that we're seeing in newsrooms and in media enterprises across the country, is that, like, there just seems to be a managerial crisis in new media in particular. And Trunk was, I mean, perhaps exemplary of that, in the fact that they were going to take an old media model, the LA Times, and try and turn it into new media for no ascertainable reason. Mm-hmm. But a bunch of these people who are just rotating from job to job at places like Deadspin now, like you said, they do just seem to be idiots. They have no real plan for, like, what actually makes a site good or successful or valuable, and therefore they're, like, just prone to do the wildest shit imaginable. It's terrible. So, yeah,
help me with this story. So we've talked about in past weeks how there was new legislation passed at the state level to prevent rent gouging, implement just cause protections. It's going to help a lot of renters who were previously unprotected. In response to that, there were a lot of reports of landlords raising or doing rent gouging before the law was implemented. And LA City Council tried to put a stop to that by saying you can't do this anymore. Then this week, on October 30th, the city council passed a rule saying that they would provide payments for 3 months to help eligible tenants who got their rent gouged or who are facing rent increases exceeding 8%.
If you are below a certain income level.
it seems to me that this would be a powerful incentive for a landlord to do gouging. Unless, like, is it the case that, like, it already has to have happened?
From what I understand, and this was very confusing, and covering these things is never easy because no one will answer you in plain language or on the record. So we had to kind of go back and forth to figure it out. But I think what happened was they wanted to cover this window, right? This gap to the end of the year. And if you are a landlord and wanted to raise someone's rent more than this percentage, say like 10 and up, you would have to give more than 60 days notice. So there's no possible
you already would have had to have done that.
So it could be that you're right. Like the last like 2 months, maybe somebody tried to do this between the point it was announced and the end of the year. And how much did they didn't have that much money to give away, even like $3 million or something like that.
Yes.
So that's, I don't know how fast that goes or how many people are going to sign up for this or if they're going to make sure that the right people are going to get helped. I mean, I don't know how you implement something like this fast enough to actually help people. And I hope that they will be nimble enough to do that. I'm like rolling my eyes a lot.
And you can't get reimbursed for payments that you already had to make.
Right. I think you would have to, it would have to be, I don't even know. I mean, it would be covering, I mean, November 1st, they announced it before November 1st. So maybe you would get help for November 1st and December 1st. Right. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this, but it sounds...
But that's the thing. You get help for November 1st and December 1st, but your rent, the gouged rent is still in place. So you get...
Forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you get covered for up to 3 months.
And then and then the other part that really bothers me is this just funneling money to these bad landlords?
The answer is yes. It is not a reward for gouging rents because like... So that was my big question. You're right. Yeah. That 60-day... like a window before which you have to make the announcement means that landlords can't gouge rents now and get paid by the city. But still, they are going to get paid off.
Right.
And then once the year ends, tenants are still going to be stuck with the higher rent.
Is it also fair to say that we should be compiling some sort of public directory of where the relatives of every city council person rent from to just kind of see whether or not any of those places are benefiting from this policy?
This also brings up issues about when it goes into effect at the state level, how effective, because the thing that precipitated this was there was some like convention of landlords where they were telling the landlords how to, this thing's coming, it's going to cause you problems.
Evict
here's
as many
here's
people
how
as
to
you
get
can.
Around it. And that's super troubling that we have.
Super troubling that this enormous loophole was put into place in the first place.
I think the loopholes will get covered, but you have to also look at like a bunch of different cities are doing like rent hike, rent freeze, everybody's, you know, emergency rent control type or like ordinances, all these different things. But again, you've got all these cities in LA and where they're all going to be different now. And it's, you'll have some protection from the state, but all that other stuff that could have been passed by the state would have been super helpful at this point. And it's a little bit hard. Some governments just aren't going to be able to scramble to protect their people in the same way. So
speaking of scrambling, I'm going to do a haste transition. Should we talk about LA exit? Lexit?
Yo, boy.
Lexit or leave it?
Yeah.
This was really, I was really enjoying, I don't know, I guess every week that you don't have to go to LAX is a good week. So I was just enjoying watching like Arash Markazi, like an entire Twitterati.
This was the mistake.
Meltdown.
Influencers are at LAX. They are always there.
There were so many people just like using the most bombastic terms to like denounce this change where you now have to take a shuttle to get your Uber out of a parking lot. Lauren Nelson, intrepid LA Times reporter, was like tweeting back and forth from the shuttle, which apparently they weren't letting her ride back to the airport. So
people were very mad at Lauren Nelson.
Why?
Like blaming her for what happened
for LAX.
Why did you do this? Laura, it's okay.
I think it was a mistake for Lauren Nelson to do it.
Well, no, she said people were like emailing her to explain it because they didn't want to sign up to subscribe to the paper.
Today, Sunday, I noticed that the LAX Twitter account had begun posting wait times at the parking lot.
Yeah, no, they've been doing it for the last few days, which they haven't, unless they're lying, none of them have been that bad. There was one or two where it was like Lyft 30 minutes plus, but most of them were very short, and I can't really understand.
You would see pictures of people waiting at this thing where it's just like, I don't know, it's like Disneyland lines waiting to get into.
But taking a taxi from any other major city, you wait in a really long line.
So here's the thing, and Paul Koretz did maybe like the first sensible, I think, thing that he's ever proposed in his time on the LA City Council, which was like he was saying that they should allow taxis to go back, because at a taxi, they're not queuing or anything. It's just they show up, whoever is available gets in.
And you know the reason that they can't do that for Uber and Lyft is because if they queued up, they'd be providing a transportation service, not like a technology service.
Oh my God. Really?
They're in denial. And yeah, reverse DAVDA. They're still going down. They did put out that they put forward $120 million for their ballot measure
where
they are trying to fight AB5, which they say does not apply to them. Which
If you get the higher service one, what's it called?
The Uber Black.
You can still get picked up on the curb. And I don't
know
what
that is ugly. I'm not sure what's happening there. That is ugly. But yeah, so the LA exit, LAX, their Twitter account has really only ever done one thing for me, which is to tell me that traffic in the main concourse area is heavy.
Is that the pin tweet?
They tweet that about four times a day. So now I guess they're switching over to tweeting about Uber pickup times.
They released some data too about on November 1st on Friday about how obviously blissfully uncongested every other ride was if you were taking the Flyway or all these other shuttles, and they've never seen anything like it. You know, it's actually they're coming on time and picking people up and moving through, so good job. Can't say I'm that upset.
Can we conclude with a next door post,
please?
This was posted by Matt Gertz. It's about Echo Park Lake. And the headline is, should Echo Park Lake be fenced?
Oh my God.
It was a real act of generosity by Matt Gertz not to post this person's name. Okay, the text is, seeing the back and forth regarding the homeless encampments in the park and the loss of a public good, some drastic measures need to go in place. Removing the binary conversation between compassion for homeless versus lack thereof is a healthier way to have this discussion.
This would have been my favorite sentence of this post if it weren't for the next paragraph that we're about to get to.
A healthy discussion and remove this binary
morality,
compassion, or not.
I'm so tired of having to insert compassion into every conversation.
We want to ultimately save the integrity of the park as a safe space for children and wildlife. It is the one communal space that is devoid of class/economic segregation and allows all to equally enjoy their surroundings. That sentence makes it seem like he sounds like that is a good thing, but the rest of this post makes it seem like that is the primary issue.
The other shoe is about
to drop. The homeless tents and street vendors are completely taking that away from the community. So I guess they're making it class segregated by
being there.
Yeah. By not allowing the wealthy to sleep in that. Or you can if you want to. I propose. A modest proposal.
Just turn it into a campsite. It's so easy for anyone. Yeah.
I propose that we fence in the park with gated access from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. The gates would be set up to prevent street vendors and other non-authorized activity from encroaching into our duly deserved civic right.
Oh, Jesus.
This
Christ.
Is such a classic thing that you hear so much about. All these people being in this area means it's lost as a public space.
Yes. That's a very LA mindset.
It is so
it's
weird.
Disturbing.
There's so many people here that people can't be here anymore.
I've never heard it put so stupidly, like so brazenly, dumbly, to just be like, this is the only place where segregation doesn't exist in LA, and therefore we need to bar all of the poor people from entering.
And this person also probably moved here 2 months ago.
Probably.
The concluding sentence is,
Echo Park is unlivable.
Want to hear more from all of us about this, and let's keep it focused on the park, as this is not a conversation on how to solve homelessness. So just getting out ahead of it, you can kind of sense that some people might be mad. What he's saying about all those people. If we could just keep it focused on the park, please.
I really know that we're at risk of getting off topic here.
That is it for LA Podcast. There's some more Sheriff's Department stuff to talk about, but I think that we're going to get into that in future weeks.
Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.